Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Ah, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Or if you're outside of the area code, it is area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is fundamental issues for our country. Each of my guests will be discussing something that is vital to our national interest, health care, education, or employment. My first guest is appalled at the state of medical care in the United States. She reckons that doctors misdiagnose patients' conditions 40% of the time, a failure rate that is unacceptable in other aspects of life. We'll discuss her findings and get to the root cause of the problem. My second guest defied the odds. He grew up in Teaneck, New Jersey, got good grades, was enrolled in engineering school at a major Ivy League university, and then he got the call, was drafted by the Major League Baseball team Chicago Cubs. We'll discuss his Major League career and the importance of getting good grades and finishing your education. My third guest is a sought-after expert in human relations and employment trends. Her company, the Herman Group, tracks the trends of the job market in this country. We'll discuss how today's unemployment figures fit her 2011 predictions that she made the last time she was on the show in January. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. You'll want to keep that number handy because we will have a giveaway in this segment. My first guest, Linda Meilenk, is an award-winning writer, a columnist, and a journalist who has done extensive research on physicians and healthcare outcomes after being diagnosed with fibromyalgia 10 years ago. Along with Dr. Patrick Rhodes, she is the author of What Your Doctor Doesn't Know About Fibromyalgia. Welcome to the show. How are you today, Linda?
Oh, I'm really good. Thank you, and thank you for having me on today. I do have a lot to say about the medical profession that I didn't know when I first got fibromyalgia 10 years ago.
Well, it is intriguing, and it really, I'm really struck by the fact your first statistic. But when you evaluate medicine, you got to look at the outcomes, the rate of success there. And you assert that doctors misdiagnose patients' conditions 40% of the time. How'd you arrive at that statistic?
Well, it comes from, ironically, the Journal of American Medicine. And it was published in a book called Complications, and which is by another doctor, Dr. Gawande. And they did autopsies after patients died to see if the autopsy result was the same as what the diagnosis was. And they found that they were right about 60% of the time. The other 40%, the doctors had given a different diagnosis. And needless to say, there were many, many cases where the correct diagnosis would have affected the outcome, which means that these people wouldn't be dead today.
I see. Well, now that's very disturbing. Now, first of all, though, just to set the record straight, autopsies are not done in every case, and particularly in the case of older people. They don't necessarily do an autopsy after a person passes away. There's nothing that guarantees that. So is this a limited set? Are we looking at a broad range of statistics, or is it a fairly narrow set that you looked at?
Well, they did some studies in 1998 and 1999, and which they did. They autopsied, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. And, no, they were doing autopsies on just normal people. As you said, usually there's no autopsy. But what they did was just look at what it said on the death certificate as in terms of why the doctor said they died, and then they had someone else doing the autopsies. It was a narrow segment of the population.
Okay.
However, there's no reason to expect that anything would be different if they had done every one. Doctors are often wrong about what their diagnosis is. In the case of, for instance, if you have something like gallbladder disease, or if you live in a certain city, you're like 260% more likely to have your gallbladder out. And just recently, I was diagnosed with gallbladder disease and told I needed my gallbladder out. Went to a different doctor who said, I don't think that's the case. So I went right back on my diet. This was 2 months ago, and I'm feeling fine. Obviously, I was just about to have a surgery that I didn't need.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. We're talking to Linda Mylink. Linda, let's take a look at some of the major diseases that are killing Americans today, and they are in this order. Heart disease, 26.6% of the population die of that. And we've made some substantial progress in diagnosing heart disease correctly. Cancer, 22.8%, and cerebrovascular disease, otherwise known as stroke, 5.9%. Now, here's where the Starbucks card comes in for my listeners. Anybody can call us in at 639-0008. Tell me, what is the number one cause of death in America, and you will win a $10 Starbucks card. The number again is 639-0008. Call in, tell me what the number one cause of death in America is, and you will win that card. All right, Linda, now back to the big three diseases. Cancer continues to be a scourge over the past 50 or 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Despite all of the money that we poured into research and the advances in technology, this statistic may stagger you. In 1950, the death rate per 100,000 people for cancer was 193.9. 2002, 52 years later, the death rate per 1,000, 193.4. It had not gone down significantly. In 2005, which is the last year that we have reliable statistics, the death rate per 100,000 was only 183.8. So no significant improvement there at all, despite everything that we're throwing at it. Now, you've discovered the similar statistic that, in fact, misdiagnosis is detected in autopsy studies. That number really hasn't changed since 1938. So it seems to me we're no better off at diagnosing and curing cancer than we were 61 years ago. We're no better off at diagnosing disease overall than we were 73 years ago. Why is that?
Well, if you take a look at the way our system works, and it is very, very bad. They did a study of 19 countries, civilized countries. We came in 18th out of 19 in medical care. First thing you do, you have maybe some chest pain. You go to your family doctor, and he says, yes, you have chest pain. You should go see a cardiologist. You go home, you call the cardiologist. It's 3 months before the cardiologist is going to see you. If you go to the emergency room, they're going to look at you and see if you're having a heart attack. If you're not having a heart attack and you're not in imminent danger of dying, you're going to go home. It's not like the old days where they used to put you in the hospital and keep you there till they did tests and found out what's wrong.
Mm.
They only keep you in the emergency room long enough so that you're not going to die on their watch, and they send you home. So you have, from the time that you first had those chest pains until you actually see a doctor, months can go by. And as you know, certain things like heart disease can be difficult to detect, and angina can come and go. And you're very lucky if you have those symptoms ahead of time before the heart attack comes. But in the way our system is set up, it may be months before you see a doctor.
Hmm.
And now, this is not just true of that heart disease. It's also true of cancer. You go to the emergency room with intractable pain. They will send you home unless you're going to die. And it may take you months before you can see a specialist who will diagnose you. Part of this, I think, is set up by insurance companies who want to make sure that you don't go to see a specialist unless you really need to. Unfortunately, a lot of people, before they get to that specialist, they're not going to make it.
That's a staggering number. We're talking to Linda Mylink. Linda, hold that thought for just a minute. We're getting a lot of calls, people calling in, and let me just shortcut some of the answers that we're getting. The number one answer we seem to be getting time and time again is heart disease as the number one reason cause for death in the United States. I will tell you, it is not heart disease, it is not cancer, and it is not a stroke. So you don't have to call in with those answers, but it is something other than those three. What is the number one cause of death in the United States? If you have the right answer, you'll win a $10 Starbucks card, and I'll tell you the answer at the end of this segment. So, Linda, back to you. Now, what blows my mind is this. The rate of new information and scientific discovery is staggering when it comes to the medical field. The amount of medical knowledge that we have increases 2 times every 18 months. Mm-hmm. That means that if you're a recent medical school graduate, June of 2009, you're out of touch with the latest development in medicine today, unless you keep up with all of the everything that's going on there. With the pace of change in medicine being so high, how can doctors even expect to keep up with this avalanche of new information?
Well, one way is, and I think doctors did do this in the past, is you take Friday off and you spend Friday going through medicine and trying to keep informed. Doctors see more patients than they ever did before, and they spend less time with them. And the reason for that is obvious. You make a lot more money this way. And Dr. Rhodes, with whom I wrote the book, actually said, you know, the thing is that you get used to the lifestyle, and your family gets used to the lifestyle, and you're a doctor. You're supposed to keep up. So if you want to make more money, you see more patients. And this is not to say that doctors don't have an overwhelming amount of information that they have to, you know, cope with all the time. But they often don't go. They're supposed to go to continuing education every year.
Right.
Most of our continuing education right now is sponsored by drug companies. My husband's doctor told him while we were sitting there that she didn't really have any interest in liver disease, but she, for her continuing education, she went skiing in Vail because it was paid for by a drug company.
Okay.
Okay. She's a GP. She doesn't need to know that much about liver disease, but she does need to know more about things like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome. Heart disease probably is one of them, too. But that wasn't the option she chose, and they have that option. And these are sponsored by drug companies with the sole idea of helping them to helping the drug companies to sell more drugs.
Well, now that's an interesting point that you're making right there, Linda. And it sounds almost as if the doctor was being a little bit derelict in her duties by not attending something that was more closely aligned with her specialty, rather than taking the free ski trip to Colorado in order to hear something on liver disease, which had absolutely no bearing. Now, so that's an extreme case, and we'll throw that out as the exception and not the rule. But let's take a look at the way in which medicine is taught in this country, and I'd want to get your opinion on this, so bear with me as I set up this question. You know, right now, the way in which we teach doctors, train doctors in the United States, 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, then you do residency. And during residency, it's like being tortured. You've got grueling hours, you've got inhumane conditions, poor food, and then we have the unrealistic expectations that all of our doctors are going to do that. Does this grueling pace inhibit or encourage doctors to really continue their education past residency?
Oh, that is another really big problem in the United States, is the way we train doctors. And they've said this about other professions. Would you really want, for instance, somebody who's flying an airplane to have been without sleep for 30 hours, where you have somebody writing a prescription for you or diagnosing you, and they haven't had any sleep in 2 days? I've been told, I have not gone to medical school, but I've been told that once you get into your residency, it's kind of a crazy world where information is just thrown at you. First, you're learning calculus and all this other stuff that doesn't really apply, and you go right from that to taking care of people, and the information, it just a constant barrage of information that you're supposed to be absorbing, and it's nearly impossible to do that under those conditions. Anyone who stayed up all night trying to study for an exam can tell you that. The information isn't going to stay with you. You're going to be lucky if you can pass the exam. So, yeah, and I do think it discourages a lot of really good people. I have one son who said he thought about going to medical school, but he didn't want to work that hard. And he's an executive now for Johnson & Johnson. I don't know what that says about the drug companies, but in any event, yeah, I think it discourages a lot of people, as does the fact that doctors make a lot of money. People going into medical school today, they go in generally because they want to make money. And in the past, I think that used to be They went because they actually wanted to help people. And they have done studies on this. I just can't quote you one right off hand.
All right. My guest is Linda Meilink, author of the book, What Your Doctor Doesn't Know About Fibromyalgia. Linda, let me just expand the question a little bit more then. What does the American Medical Association, why does the American Medical Association have a monopoly over accrediting medical schools? If we opened it up to more schools, wouldn't we get more, better qualified doctors?
Oh, definitely. And there's something, to me, we live in a country where we're supposed to have free trade and opportunity for all, and yet this is a very, very structured, they want to structure the amount of doctors. They say we have too many doctors, too few doctors. It kind of doesn't make sense to me. In any other field, like, for instance, I was in journalism, anybody can go to journalism school, and they don't keep making the standards higher because they think we have an surplus of journalism students. If we have a surplus of journalism students, we have more journalists out there. I don't understand that at all. I don't understand their motives for that at all, and I don't understand why they feel they can control that one, and when all other occupations, they have as many people as want to go, can go to study and be a lawyer or go into business, whatever they want to do.
All right, Linda, and it's just typical monopoly practice when it comes to the American Medical Association. Back to our question for the $10 Starbucks card. What is the number one cause of death in the United States? I'll expand it. It's the number one cause of death worldwide as well. And it is not heart disease. It is not cancer. It is not stroke. And a couple of other answers have come in. Obesity is also not one of the answers. It's the number one cause of death in the United States. We'll tell you at the end of this segment, and if you don't guess it right, you're going to hit yourself and go, oh, I should have known that. Back to you, Linda. So, Linda, talk to me about your book and talk to me about the disease fibromyalgia. We all see the commercials on television about fibromyalgia. What is it, and why is it so difficult to correctly diagnose?
Well, it's difficult to correctly diagnose because it's a relatively new phenomenon. And my sister got it about 30 years ago. The original diagnosis was that it was a mental disorder. It was caused by depression, and she was sent to a psychiatrist who said it was all in her head. So it's kind of always had a stigma attached to it. There is no medical specialty that treats fibromyalgia. Rheumatologists don't treat it. They treat arthritis. There's no one set of specialty where it falls under, and we don't know what causes it. Most people have it an average of about 6 years before they're diagnosed.
Wow.
And a lot of doctors still don't believe in it. They believe that it's a syndrome of other problems, should we say, like maybe you have some stenosis or problems with your neck, and that causes the pain, and then you have sleeplessness because you're under stress. And so they still have no complete criteria for it, although there's a list of symptoms. And the symptoms are more than just pain. You have pain, but you also have a thing called fibro fog, where it's really difficult to concentrate. You also tend to lose direction. I lost all sense of direction, and I had good direction. There's a irritable bowel syndrome that goes along with it. Insomnia is another problem.
Wow.
With it.
It sounds like a really rough disease, and it must be a real disease because we see commercials on television about it now, so that must justify it. My guest has been Linda Meilink, author of the book, What Your Doctor Doesn't Know About Fibromyalgia. Linda, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, if you just type in What Your Doctor Doesn't Know About Fibromyalgia, it will take you to Amazon.com, and you can buy the book there. There's also some very good reviews on that site of what the book is about. And you also can buy it on Kindle. And I have, for some reason, I sell a lot of books on Kindle, which to me indicates that a lot of people who have money and are very literate are buying the book, and I sometimes wonder if doctors are buying it, because it will give them a short crash course on what fibromyalgia is and what can be done about it. Just one thing I want to mention really quickly, and this is another way that we're way behind, is they are doing work now in clinical trials for treatment with stem cells, and it's very exciting. It looks like the closest thing we may have to a cure.
And we'll have to have you back, Linda, in the future to talk about that. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.